Island Harvest Food Bank is a lifeline for people struggling to put food on their tables during this unprecedented public health crisis. But we need your help. Your generosity will allow us to continue to provide critical food and support for homebound seniors, veterans, working family, and children. If you or someone you know needs food assistance or to support our work on Long Island, call 631-873-4775 or visit islandharvest.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, 6 o'clock time for Off the Wall. Back with another action-packed edition of Off the Wall, our weekly summation of the insanity of the world, done only as can be done from right here in Stony Brook, or near Stony Brook. We're around. We're not actually there. We're remote. And
we're down the road.
We're down the road, just a ways, not too far. Although we could be, you know, we could be in China. Well, probably that would be difficult to get into China, but we could be anywhere. But we're not at the station, but our voices are going through this. It's amazing what we can do these days. I'm easily impressed. This is Emmanuel, and joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, I'm over here.
Yeah, here we are. Wow, another week. Another week has gone by. We're kind of used to it, wanting to do other things. But overall, I think we're doing the right things as far as the sacrifices we've been making, and just kind of figuring out how to get through this crisis.
Slowly but surely.
Mm-hmm.
With caution.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know how many shows we've done remotely at this point.
Maybe 24.
Has it been that many? That's 24 shows. I don't know if that's true.
Well, going on 24, I guess, is what I should have said.
Wow. Well, it's the last show of May. How about that? And we have a lot to discuss, to talk. I miss taking phone calls. We can't take phone calls in the current setup. But we do have to do something else. If you listen to our last show on the other radio station, boy, what a disaster that was last week. It's because technology kind of went kablooey.
Well, through no fault of our own.
I'll take some blame. I mean, I don't know what I did wrong, but sure.
I was willing to take blame, but I upon further inspection, I think we were mostly okay. Although it was clear to me that there was a wire that broke in one of
a wire somewhere that breaks.
It's true in one of the connections, but I guess I'll elaborate on that another time.
Well, you don't have to elaborate on it. It's just people don't really care about what goes on in the background. They just want to hear their entertainment.
And then when I went to fiddle with the wires and like mess around with it, that wire was like moving around and causing like hums terrible sounds.
Amazing what technology can do if it turns on you. But the thing is,
we were using a new system.
That's what I'm saying. It's a new system we were just using for the first time, so we didn't know if the problem was on the other end or on our end. So what we're doing right now at this moment is testing something on this end, something we don't use on this radio show, which is Skype. We don't use Skype on this show, but Skype is something that failed on the other show. So what we're trying to ascertain right now is if the same thing happens here where we bring up Skype and if for some reason it doesn't go over the air. So we're not calling anybody. We're just going to play what we're going to do.
It's a sound test service.
A sound test service.
Yeah, it's like pre-programmed into your account.
Okay, so what do I do? Just bring this up here? And we'll,
yeah, just
we'll
bring
something?
That up and I'm going to click something. Oh,
well, did you hear that? Our voice has changed.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so as soon as I brought that up, I'm going to bring it down now. Wow, that happened again. Now I'm going to keep talking while I bring it up. You hear that? As when I bring the pot up,
yeah,
our voices kind of fade out as I pass over a certain point. Now I'm going to go down and keep talking. And it did the same thing again. That's weird. So there's something in the board, I think.
I think it's also interference because the theme is playing on another computer, and that channel is also up right now. I think they somehow conflict with these two things that I'm pointing at that no one can see,
yes,
and no one knows about.
But Kyle, it's a mixing board. A mixing board should mix, you know? You should be able to bring up multiple channels at the same time. That's my understanding of what a mixing board is.
Well, there's no making sense of it. Let's get to this.
Let's get to the test. Let's see if we can get to that point and do a show.
Call testing service.
Oh.
After the beep, please record a message. Afterwards,
wait,
your message will be played back to you.
Oh, so we get to record a message,
yeah,
somewhere. Is this being recorded out in space and,
yeah,
it's going to come back to us?
In the Skype cloud. There's like a cloud.
Skype cloud, okay.
We're talking to the ether, basically.
So how does the message end?
I don't really know. There's just...
Because we don't determine how long... Oh, I guess it's over. We get to record a message,
yeah,
somewhere. Is this being recorded out in space and,
yeah,
it's going to come back to us?
In the Skype cloud. There's like a cloud.
What kind of technology?
We're,
okay,
talking to the ether, basically.
So how do you
just have this as a special...
End?
I don't really know. Yes. There's just...
If you are able to hear your own voice,
uh-huh,
then you have configured Skype correctly.
Okay.
Again.
If you hear this message, but not your own voice, then something is wrong with your audio recording settings.
Okay.
Please check your microphone and microphone settings or visit Skype.com for more help. Thank you for using the Skype call testing service. Goodbye.
Is Skype a British company? Or did they just use somebody with a British accent?
I have no clue.
To make
it
us feel calm.
Like perhaps they are.
All right, well.
Or they're just worldly.
So, if you heard that, it doesn't prove anything because we have to determine if it went out over the air. And we can do that by listening to our archives later, I think. Yeah, that'll
tell us. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, no. If you're listening live right now, then and you heard that, that means something. But if you listen later, it doesn't mean anything because what we put on the archive comes from a different source.
Oh yeah, we're handling the.
So it's really complicated.
Well, you were talking about the mixer. I mean, we're using a lot of aspects of this,
uh-huh,
things that are just done for us in studios, and okay, yeah, this is part of that grit that
we still have to press the buttons in the studio.
Yeah,
so people
that's
don't
true.
Think we're just, you know.
Well, I'm not trying to
lying on a couch being fed grapes or something. That's not how it works. Down
no,
there.
But the new station is like the Cadillac of student and.
I did suggest that
radio.
Once, and it was mocked for a full year. Grapes are healthy. I don't know what, you know, historic, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Point is, we did our test. Let's move on with the show.
Yeah, please.
Hopefully things worked out. So how do you think things are going with this coronavirus, COVID-19 crisis? Supposedly tomorrow, this part of New York is going to enter phase one. If you listened earlier, we had two press conferences on in the afternoon. It was really interesting listening to current events happening. Cuomo and Steve Ballone, our county executive, talking about tomorrow where Long Island is going to open to a limited degree, and I think that's a good thing. I think we're ready for it. The death toll in New York has gone below 100 pretty consistently, and that's a big deal, considering it was in the multiple hundreds for a while. The only reason it has gone down, it's not because it's summertime, it's not because the virus is getting bored, it's because people have been taking precautions, walking around with masks or keeping their distance, not being stupid. Of course, there are those people who are being stupid. And, you know, I know I'm hard on people. I'm hard on people that aren't following the guidelines. You know, I understand the impatience, folks. I really do. I know we all want to go outside and act like everything is normal and, you know, just the way it was last year. We want to do the things that we like doing in the summertime, in the springtime, or we don't like to be told what to do. Nobody likes to be told what to do, but this is a global pandemic, and it's something that you need to take seriously. I thought it was really interesting. The Memorial Day weekend, which just went by, we were driving around, seeing people acting kind of dumb, walking in crowds, and we've seen more reports of people going to the beach. And, you know, going to the beach is fine, but you can't hang out in crowds. You can't hang out with strangers who aren't wearing masks. That is how the disease spreads. That's how it started. One person started all of this. I don't want to make that person feel bad, assuming they survived. I think they did. Boy, they must feel terrible. But, no, it could have been anybody who traveled here from a different place where the virus existed. You could be the next person that does it for the second wave. There's no reason why that wouldn't happen again if people aren't careful. But what was interesting was watching the crowds at these beaches and on the streets and places like Port Jefferson. By the way, the moronic ice cream shop I hear at the corner there, they put up a big impeach Cuomo sign.
You said there's more propaganda. Yeah,
I'll get into that later. Anyway, the point is, all these people were walking around being idiots, not wearing masks as if they feel they can just, you know, spit in the face of the coronavirus, which is probably the dumbest thing you could do, too. And you know what happened then? It started to rain a little bit of drizzle, you know, light rain. Everybody went inside. Everybody left the beach and got off the streets. They went home. That's all it took. A little bit of moisture, a little bit of rain was enough to get all these people to follow the guidelines and go home. I didn't see any picket signs or demonstrations against the rain. They just accepted that rain, that's real. That's really happening. That's not a conspiracy. It's not fiction. So, you know, if you can pay attention to a little drizzle coming from clouds, maybe pay attention to a global pandemic that has killed 348,000. I'm looking at the screen right now. 348,000 people.
That's the deaths.
That's wow. The deaths. Number of
globally,
people who have gotten the disease is 5.5 million. And we are about to cross 100,000. It's weird. If you look at CNN, we're almost at 99,000, and MSNBC is way ahead. I'm not sure how they count them. But the sad fact is we're going to hit 100,000. That is just insane. And I have little patience for people who try and minimize this, saying, oh, they were old. They were sick. It's just like the flu. Okay, well, you know, let's dissect those. It's just like the flu. So in your world, it's okay to just have another flu? Have two of them? You know, have 100,000 more people just died who weren't going to die before? If the planes had crashed into a senior center on 9/11, killed a bunch of 85-year-olds, you would have been okay with that? Yeah? These are people. These are our neighbors. These are our relatives. These are people who did not have to die. And it's a sad legacy that we are leaving if we minimize that or if we open the door to it happening yet again. I mean, look at the numbers. We are almost a third of the total number of deaths in the world. And we are certainly not a third of the population. China has over a billion people. China had this disease first when very little was known about it. And yet they were able to contain it and stop it at about, what, 3,000? In over a billion people. Now, I know there's lots of criticism about China. Yeah, China is a repressive regime. But one thing that we were both impressed with while we were traveling up north in Canada in January, hearing the reports coming from China, they were very specific as to what was going on. And while they almost undoubtedly covered up at the beginning, they did not cover up when it became clear that this was serious. I was impressed. A lot of people were impressed. Now, I know now, trying to change the narrative a bit, you got to blame somebody, trying to blame China, saying they started the whole thing. Maybe it was even intentional. But it doesn't fly if you look at the facts. They were pretty open and honest about what was going on after an initial period of trying to cover it up. And that poor doctor paid with his life for trying to do the right thing over there. The disease spread throughout the world, throughout Europe. Horrible toll in Spain and Italy. But we surpassed that. We surpassed that. What are we doing wrong? There's so much that we are not communicating that we are dropping the ball on. And as far as changing the narrative, that is what we talked about last week or the week before. That is the weapon that is always used by those who are guilty, those who are failing in one form or another, and pretty obviously in the wrong. What's the best thing to do? Point the finger at somebody else. Every school kid knows that.
Blame your competitor, your competition.
Your adversary, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Blame anybody, just not yourself. And, okay, so now we knew this was going to happen. They're blaming China. They're actually trying to blame our governor, Governor Cuomo. Now, you may not like Cuomo. A lot of people don't. And you may not agree with many of his platforms. I certainly don't. That's fine. But if you listen to the guy, if you've been following the guy, he has been on top of this. He has been surrounded by experts. He has not minimized this. He has not said the stupid things that our president has said. He has not attacked people for criticizing him. He has taken blame. He has accepted that he is not an expert. But what you're going to see is Cuomo being blamed. In fact, this happened at Stony Brook. The last couple of days, there was a demonstration on Memorial Day outside the veterans' home, and horrible tragedy. Many people in that facility lost their lives to COVID-19. And when I saw the demonstration, I was very sympathetic until I realized that this was basically a front for Trump, because there were all these signs saying that Cuomo forced these people to die, which sounds absurd. Not a single word about all the things that Trump has done. You know, if you're going to criticize Cuomo and you don't criticize Trump, don't expect me to take you seriously.
Yeah, it's mighty suspicious.
I mean, nobody can look at the things that man says in Washington, D.C. and say, yeah, you know what, he's got a point. He's just coming at it from a different angle. No. The guy's incompetent. The guy's a fool. The guy should not be there. And the guy has a lot of blood on his hands. So, okay. Cuomo forced senior citizens to die in nursing homes. Yeah, not really what happened, okay? The reports you might be hearing are that the state sent more than 4,500 patients into nursing homes. Here's what the secretary to the governor, Melissa DeRosa, said on Saturday. I just want to reiterate once again that the policy that the Department of Health in New York State put out was in line directly with the March 13th directive put out by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. You might have heard of them, CDC, and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, that read, and I quote, nursing homes should admit any individuals from hospitals where COVID is present. Not could, should. That is President Donald Trump's CMS and CDC. There are over a dozen states that did the exact same thing, many of whom were concerned about hospital capacity. And obviously, any death is an unfortunate death. It's been a national and international tragedy that everybody has had to grapple with, and it's something that we're trying to learn from every day and move forward. And you know, if you look worldwide, nursing homes everywhere have been affected by this. It's a hot spot. It's a horrible tragedy. And could have been done differently? Sure, it could have been done much better. No question about that. But to say that Cuomo somehow masterminded this and sent these people to their deaths, it's insane. It is absolutely insane. The state survives at the behest of the federal government. So if you don't fund the state has to somehow pay for things. And then guess what? The state has to cut things. So it's not like the governors are just sitting around saying, you know what, I'm going to cut this, I'm going to cut that because I can. They're doing it out of necessity because the funds have dried up because of whatever stupid reason Trump comes up with this week. Somebody insulted him on Twitter. That's all it takes. And that's literally what we're looking at here. We're looking at states with very few cases getting preferential treatment over states that are mostly Democrat. It's sick. It's a crime.
Sabotage.
It's practically genocide. I mean, if Democrats were a race, it would be genocide. Literally targeting states that have more, you know, that are blue states, and giving them less. What do you think is going to happen? States with big cities. You have to look at that. You have to see that a pandemic is going to affect crowded places a lot more than open landscape. We should all know this. Anyway, continuing with this. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services issued a memorandum March 13th stating in part, nursing homes should admit any individuals that they would normally admit to their facility, including individuals from hospitals where a case of COVID-19 was or is present. All right. Now, Cuomo announced a new policy May 10th saying a hospital cannot discharge a person who is COVID positive to a nursing home. Being a little bit more specific there to prevent what I think are bad mistakes. Releasing somebody who's COVID positive to a nursing home is a bad idea. But it fell within the guidelines that were issued. And keep in mind, in March, when all this was happening, this thing was really, really skyrocketing. It was scary as hell. Right out on our athletic fields here at Stony Brook, they built a hospital. They were working around the clock. We were looking at drone footage of this, and it was like watching an episode of MASH. You know, all these jeeps and people running around. They built this thing. I am so proud of what they did. Now they haven't used it, and I know we'll get mocked for that. We'll get mocked for wasting time, wasting money, building a hospital we didn't even need. Well, you know what, folks? That's your fault. That's your fault for acting mature and implementing social distancing and wearing masks. You stopped this disease before it really got out of hand. Had you not done that, boy, that hospital would be full right now. And then everybody would see. So, yeah, it kind of sucks, doesn't it, that we didn't get to use it. But you know what? We might still get to use it if the idiots and fools have their way and continue to act like nothing's wrong. Okay. It's right there. It's right there in the athletic fields, ready to be used. I just want to read a couple of things, though, from this memo, because this is very important. It comes from the Center for Clinical Standards and Quality / Quality Safety and Oversight Group of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, dated March 13, 2020, addressed to state survey agency directors from the Director of Quality Safety and Oversight Group. Subject: Guidance for Infection Control and Prevention of Coronavirus Disease 2019, COVID-19 in nursing homes, revised. When should nursing homes consider transferring a resident with suspected or confirmed infection with COVID-19 to a hospital? Nursing homes with residents suspected of having COVID-19 infection should contact their local health department. Now listen to this. Residents infected with COVID-19 may vary in severity from lack of symptoms to mild or severe symptoms or fatality. Initially, symptoms may be mild and not require transfer to a hospital, as long as the facility can follow the infection prevention and control practices recommended by CDC. Facilities without an airborne infection isolation room are not required to transfer the resident, assuming the resident does not require a higher level of care, and the facility can adhere to the rest of the infection prevention and control practices that are recommended. That's important. Somebody who has COVID-19 in a nursing home is recommended not to be transferred to a hospital. Stay right where you are, even if they don't have an airborne infection isolation room. That was what was being recommended to the states by the feds.
And it kind of goes along with guidelines for adults sheltering in place in their homes. If you were sick, you would go to a, quote, sick room.
Mm-hmm.
And isolate there so that your family members could take care of you but not be in direct proximity to you.
Yeah, now this is a nursing home. I don't think that's the wisest thing, but that is what the policy stated. And when you're in a situation where you're running out of hospital beds and you're frantically building more hospitals on athletic fields, you tend to follow the guidelines that have been issued to you by the authorities and Centers for Disease Control and and senators from Medicare and Medicaid, they should know what they're talking about. I think for the most part they do.
And they should be backed up by the president.
Absolutely. Of course, you know, he's attacking CDC now. He attacks anybody. He attacks the World Health Organization. Don't get me started. We don't have an hour. Continuing here, the resident may develop more severe symptoms and require transfer to a hospital for a higher level of care. Prior to transfer, emergency medical services and the receiving facility should be alerted to the resident's diagnosis, and precautions to be taken include placing a face mask on the resident during transfer. If the resident does not require hospitalization, they can be discharged to home if deemed medically and socially appropriate. Now, when should a nursing home accept a resident who was diagnosed with COVID-19 from a hospital? Here's the answer. A nursing home can accept a resident diagnosed with COVID-19 and still under transmission-based precautions for COVID-19 as long as the facility can follow CDC guidance for transmission-based precautions. If a nursing home cannot, it must wait until these precautions are discontinued. That is the policy. That is what was followed. Now, there's a note to this. Nursing homes should admit any individuals that they would normally admit to their facility, including individuals from hospitals where a case of COVID-19 was or is present. Also, if possible, dedicate a unit/wing exclusively for any residents coming or returning from the hospital. This can serve as a step-down unit where they remain for 14 days with no symptoms. For the most part, that was adhered to, I believe. So that is the fact. But what you will hear is that somehow Cuomo decided to do this on his own and is responsible for everything bad that happened in nursing homes. It's a change of the narrative. Don't let them get away with this. Don't let them just change the facts, because the facts can be backed up. And fear and hatred of somebody from the other political party or somebody from a particular part of the country or somebody of a political race or nationality, that can't be backed up with facts. It just can't. You'll see all the signs that the people saying this have bought into the narrative. It's almost, you know, we talked about the demonstration in Comac that took place a couple of weeks ago, and you saw the people there just as if they were robots, blindly saying the same things Trump says word for word. Oh, you're fake news. Yeah, News 12, you're the enemy of the people. Basically the same exact phrases.
They should be embarrassed.
I don't know if they can be.
No, I don't think they're capable of it.
I mean, say what you will about people left of center. They're always disagreeing with each other. they can never agree on a slogan. That's one of the reasons why they keep losing. You know, it's really embarrassing sometimes, but it's also admirable. So, yeah, watching these robots just going up and down the street saying the same thing, parroting Trump everywhere they go. Oh, my God. But something else, and this is an easy way to tell if you're talking to one of the converted. It's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers or something. I don't know. I'm sure some science fiction writer can figure this out. If they say Democrat Party instead of the Democratic Party, it's too late. It's too late. They've been taken. Walk away. You cannot help them. Nobody said that before Trump. Nobody referred to it as the Democrat Party. It sounds so clumsy and awkward, doesn't it? It's the Democratic Party, for God's sake. That's what it is.
We've talked about this.
Yeah. I
mean, it's ridiculous.
Apparently, yeah. Trump is offended that it has Democratic in its name, but it's in its name, you know? You refer to people as Democrats and Republicans, but Democrat Party, just that's never how it was said. He changed it, and everybody else, Fox News and all the people that want to follow him, just say the same thing. That is how you tell.
It's the ultimate. It's like a dog whistle, straight up.
Pretty much.
It's a sort of in way of describing the opposition, and it immediately sets you up to know where someone's coming from. But, yeah, it's like you said, a sure sign that someone's pretty well indoctrinated with this attitude.
It's almost funny, but it's not funny because...
It stopped being funny a long time ago.
Well, I mean, it really stopped being funny when you see something like this where a tenth of a million people, 100,000 people is a tenth of a million people, can just be killed by this thing. And I don't want to say they're okay with it, but they're minimizing it. They're minimizing what happened to such a significant chunk of the population, how so many more of us are in great danger, and so much evidence exists of how this administration did not take it seriously, did not act. Studies show, repeated studies show, all different sources, that had something been done even 1 week earlier, many tens of thousands of people would have been saved. 2 weeks earlier, the majority. You can't just ignore those facts. That's science. And when you start arguing with science, you've got to ask yourself if maybe you're on the wrong side. Anyway, I have faith. The thing is, you always pay attention to the idiots. You always pay attention to the ones that are screwing things up. You know, if you go to a good old-fashioned American mass shooting, it's always the guy with the gun people are talking about. Oh, what was he wearing? Which way did he go? What's his Facebook page like? That's all they care about. They don't care about the people that weren't doing anything. It's same thing here. You care about the idiots. You care about the ones who are doing harm. You forget that the vast majority of people are law-abiding people, and they just want to get on with their lives. You know? And
stop being screwed over and victimized. For real victimized, not fake victimized.
Mm-hmm. I always feel a sense of pride walking down the street and seeing people with masks. It sounds weird. It's a weird sentence for me to say. But I know when I see people wearing masks and being aware, they're paying attention. They're trying to stay healthy. They're trying to take care of other people. And when I see people just clowning around without masks, acting like nothing's wrong, it makes me sad. It makes me really sad, because if they don't become victims themselves, they certainly will help others become victims. And that is not who we are.
It also influences other people. When they see that, they think to themselves, they check themselves, like, hey, maybe I should have something with me, a barrier of sorts, in case. Even if it's, the smallest attempt, it is considerate, and people will, they will act accordingly the more they see that.
Mm-hmm.
I used to feel the same way about using hand signals while you're bicycling, because you're communicating with drivers, or you're educating others around you, and the more you do that, the more people will look for those sorts of things. And in this case, it's really crucial, especially people that you're going to depend on. If we see a rise in cases again, or we see other incidents, mm-hmm. you're going to want critical services. You're going to want to know that you can get medical care, and that people aren't going to be stricken themselves.
Maybe listen to those people, the people providing the medical care, the people that see this firsthand. They're the ones that you're deciding their future. You're deciding how they're going to be spending their days.
And the masks aren't like shutting down your business.
Not at all.
That's the other weird conflation, that like there's some connection between that and economic loss, which I think is really, really stupid. I'm not trying to like make that sound worse than it is, but I do think that there's the same attitude or that excuse is parroted. Well, you know, these restrictions are infringing upon my rights, you know, freedoms and these sorts of things, and not at least acknowledging that there has been some good by people following and using some of these strategies. It's really a dismissive position, I think.
You know what else infringes upon your rights? Nighttime. All right, it keeps you from doing the things that you like to do in the daytime. You know what else? Water. Because there isn't enough land. You can't walk on the water. So have a demonstration against that. Pandemics are facts. They're scientific facts. They're not political. You can't demonstrate them away. You can't just stand up to them and expect them to go away. You have to work in science, in medicine, to defeat them. And we have to stay together. There's just no other way. And I feel ridiculous that we have to even make this point. Look, if you have a business and you're upset about it, and we're in the same boat, we know what I'm having a huge fight with my bank now, because I don't want to get into it. It'll take 45 minutes. But the point is, if you're concerned with your business not being able to open, look at the people walking around without masks on. Those are the ones that are slowing it down. Those are the ones keeping your business from opening. If people walked around with masks and took this thing seriously and followed the guidelines that were handed down from various agencies and scientists and people who know how all this works, well, then we would be opening much, much sooner. Don't believe me. Look at other places where this has happened. Look at New Zealand. Just look at New Zealand. That's enough. Ireland has done a really good job. Lots of countries have attacked this. And I don't want to say been successful, but certainly done a better job than what we've done. We need to not get defensive. We need to look at what worked, fix what doesn't work, and get rid of the people that are making things even worse. So, Kyle, when is it over for you? When would you say it's back to normal?
That's a really, really tough question. And you're putting me on the spot as though I've had a chance to think about it.
I delight in putting you on the spot.
Yeah, I really find it irritating. Mm-hmm. Well, nothing's ever really been normal to me.
Mm-hmm,
I just want to start with that.
Yeah. Good save
that's
there.
It's a good...
Well, I'm thinking, for you to walk outside, no mask, no gloves, give people hugs, are we ever going to have that again? Are we ever going to shake hands again? I don't intend to walk around a mask for the rest of my life unless we totally are defeated by this thing.
I would like to see some successful vaccine trials and some therapies for this particular condition before all of those things are a daily part of my life.
So you trust the vaccine? Because there's a number of people who refuse to take vaccines. They don't trust them. They think it's part of some kind of conspiracy. And, you know, I don't believe that, but I do believe there's great harm in plunging too quickly into this, saying, oh, vaccine, I'll take it right away. Yeah, you need time to test these things, and you need all kinds of circumstances to play out, but when it's been proven, you really should believe in science, because that's how we got rid of other diseases.
Yeah, I think the vaccines themselves have a pretty sound record, and my attitude with a lot of the dissatisfaction around them is, I don't know, I find it that a lot of the symptoms that people claim are associated with it, I find a lot of that could probably be attributed to other toxins and chemicals that are a part of our...
You're talking about vaccines in general.
Yeah, in general. Mm-hmm. So I'm not, I don't know. I find that stuff foolish. It's been proven in other disease cases, and I think that it's a really wise tool for us to have to face these kinds of microbes and,
right.
To say nothing of treatments and other things like that.
Blindly trusting anything is not a good idea, but to also blindly oppose is very harmful.
Yeah, I think that opposing solutions medically you're cutting yourself off to the sort of evolution of knowledge, and there has been a lot of incredible breakthroughs in just my lifetime over the last 40 years, 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
We have a really keen understanding of this to the point where we can get a genetic sequence sent, from China, as was done eventually, and start studying the exact strings of different things that make up a particular virus. I mean, that's incredible when you really think about the ability that we have. So I just feel like all of a sudden, because somehow people get suspicious or there's been a suspicion drummed up around it, I don't know. I'm just more comfortable knowing that we've done a lot of studying about something so new and something that is so contagious and deadly. It just, it's not something to toy with. I just feel like the consequences for this continue the cost and consequences continue to tick upward, and the willingness of people protesting these things and Republicans specifically right now to force people away from a path that has been overall pretty successful is careless, because mm-hmm. the consequences are continuing to increase. We've been successful to a degree, but with all of this opening up, if it's as haphazard as it's looking, most forecasting says that we're going to see a lot more of what we previously seen if people are going gung-ho right back in. And not,
yeah.
We were supposed to go forward and then step back a little bit and then continue with the various phases. You have all different states doing different things at different rates, and so you're going to see regional changes. And I don't think that that's really the best strategy. And I don't see without treatments and vaccine trials that have been really successful, we don't have anything to fall back on. That's my point, really. And mm-hmm. the stakes just keep increasing.
Yeah, and as you said, other states having different results. New York actually is moving in the right direction. Other states, Arkansas, Georgia, Alabama, I think, moving in the wrong direction. And it's directly attributable to not taking it seriously, not doing the social distancing, not wearing the masks. So, yeah, you can have regional outbreaks, and I don't know why we have to prove that yet again, but it's entirely possible that we could see more spikes. In fact, it's quite likely we'll see more spikes if we keep doing what we're doing in New York. And I think we've done a pretty good job overall in New York, despite idiots protesting in Comac or going to bars in Patchogue. There are these outbreaks, but, you know, if you're on top of it and you say, don't do that, maybe they get the message. Hopefully they do. And we can actually move on. The majority of people act responsibly. I think that is what's going to prevail in the end.
Yeah. We want to give people every opportunity to survive this and so we can, you know, live another day in the way that we're used to. So that's what the goal is. And I really hope that people find some unity and act appropriately.
Did you see the crowd in Staten Island? This is great. Somebody walked into a supermarket without a mask, and all these people in the store were wearing masks, but they the language and the emotion, get the hell out of this store. I mean, I guess no matter what the issue is, that is basically how it's expressed. And it's just kind of weird for me to say, yeah, you know what, I agree with those people. People who are doing all the anger and yelling and screaming, I would expect that they would be, you know, directing that towards me or towards my position. But no, in this case, they were right, and the woman without the mask was in the wrong, and they taught her a thing or two, Staten Island style.
Yeah, there's different techniques, regionalized techniques for making it clear to people what the expectations are at various venues.
So what happens if the Staten Island supermarket people meet the Setauket Patriots, right, the people who organized the Comac protests, or the lame brains at the ice cream place in Port Jefferson? Yeah, I want to mention that again. Yeah, they put up a big sign saying impeach Cuomo. Yeah, that's the problem. Didn't we drive by there the other night and there was a crowd of people inside that place? That is irresponsible.
Yeah,
that should not be happening.
It's true. They had people like clustered around tables in front, and people were walking in and out. I mean, I don't know how long they've been open. I don't really care, but
I'm never going there.
That place has a lot of liability at hand if that's something that they feel strongly about.
Well, I mean, you can say impeach Cuomo. I'm not. It's just it represents a certain amount of ignorance to because it's blaming him for this or for keeping us from living our normal lives, which is exactly what we should be doing right now, is not living our normal lives while there's a pandemic. It's not like they have a sign up saying don't wear your masks, but the people who support that aren't wearing masks. You know, it's grossly irresponsible.
I just think, like, a sign like that is Exhibit A when you have your ice cream shop breakout or outbreak.
Let's hope it doesn't come to that. But I don't know. You know, you can't convince people who are so enamored with a particular platform. We've seen this countless times in world history. I just never thought I'd see it so close, right up front, where no matter what happens, it's not his fault. It's you're doing the right thing. It's somebody else's fault, whether it's Cuomo, whether it's the Chinese, whether it's space aliens. Who knows? Oh, it's how pleasant. It's time for our sustaining feature, Films of the Year That Was, where Kyle and I venture into the past, where it's so much nicer, and see an Academy Award-winning film from particular years, both domestic and foreign. Well, let's start with the foreign film that we saw from 1974. What was that, Kyle?
AmeriCord.
What now?
AmeriCord.
I don't know how to say that. It's another Fellini film from Italy.
Yes, Federico Fellini from 1973. It's a comedy-drama film.
Right. It was made in 1973, but it won for 1974. It's kind of complicated, but yeah, 1974, if people are keeping track, is the year we're up to. So yeah, it's just like all Fellini films that I've seen. It's just like this. It's such a weird couple of hours of expression and relationship and people just kind of mixing. I don't really.
It's very layered.
I don't really know where it's going, but I like the trip. No.
Yeah.
So just a crowd of people basically interacting with each other, and I guess you have to watch it 6 or 7 times to really understand it.
Yeah. I'm reading, of course, now, but. It was about a young boy and a wild group of people in this town mm-hmm. that he and his friends are navigating. And there's fascists, of course. This is 1930s fascist Italy.
That's
so,
right.
So the fascists are represented.
Think about all the films that have been made with fascists, you know, because fascists were horrible, but they were great for making films. So... folks, cheer up. In a couple of decades, people are going to be making all kinds of films about this period in history. So there's opportunity there somewhere.
Right, right. The United States. It will be our own genre, I'm sure.
Yes. So did you like it?
Did I like it? I thought it was playful and comical. Really, some funny situational stuff. And I like the antics, the sort of coming-of-age antics, and the characters were wild. The characters, very, very natural, too. It was not overly staged. It had that sort of autobiography. I can see some connections to autobiographical. But there's also just quirky, bizarre things that reminded me a lot of, like, Twin Peaks. David Lynch type stuff. The motorcyclist who just zooms in.
Yeah, the motorcyclist just keeps driving through scenes.
He's like a spirit that kind of goes between different scenarios or marks the beginning and ending of different things.
I don't think he even said a word, did he?
Absolutely. We don't know anything about the character. It's a spectacle, right?
Uh-huh.
It's just an oddity that transits. The storyline this way and that, and there are other things like that. Not anything really that comes to mind right away, but
it's good filmmaking. It's a typical Fellini, and don't expect to get too heavily into the details of the plot, but do expect to feel like you actually went to the place. So I think that's what's amazing about it.
Yeah, yeah, and there's an accordion player who's sort of like a Puck type narrator,
uh-huh.
who kind of guides you through some of the story. And what else?
Yeah, you need him. You need that guy.
Yeah, they have a festival. They have an annual bonfire that's sort of a pagan-esque festival. And the very beginning and end, they're sort of buttressed by a reference to this particular thing blowing in the wind, the puffballs.
Puffballs, yeah.
Marking spring.
They signal the beginning of spring. Have you seen puffballs yet? That,
yeah.
That means spring is here. Actually, spring has been here a while. So.
Which I think is great, because that brings in your sort of wide... your wide scenery and gives you a sense of place
mm-hmm.
always, and that's just
shows some true artistry. And of course, there's school scenes, which are always ripe for funny interactions and on and on. It is funny. There's a one point where they take a small batch of boats out and meet a cruise ship that capsizes a bunch of their boats, just like a weekend jaunt to like go cheer at the incoming ships. So there's well,
yeah,
some funny
that,
stuff
it's like
there.
The whole town goes out onto the high seas to witness a huge boat going by because they know it's going to go by at that time. Little things like that. Just these crazy projects that they embark upon for no reason other than just to enjoy life a bit. So that's what you get out of Fellini films, and I always like whatever he comes up with.
And there's a peacock.
There is a peacock. That is true.
But anyway, that's it.
So domestic, Godfather Part 2. Yes, both The Godfather and The Godfather Part 2 won the best film. Godfather in 1972 and Godfather Part 2 in 1974. Kyle, you didn't like this film so much, did you?
This one, yeah. Where do I start?
Insist upon itself? Is that what it did?
It did.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
It did a bit. It actually starts out at Lake Tahoe at a first communion party. This is
it's on the border
Michael,
of Nevada and California.
Right. So Michael is now the Don, having replaced his father father.
Yeah, his father's dead from the last film. Al Pacino plays him, and he's the new Don, and quite good at it, I think.
That's right. That's right. He's easing into the role. Very introspective. There's a lot of time shifting that's going on. It is a little bit hard to follow because at one point I think there's a reference back to his father's childhood.
Yeah.
And then there's also a reference back to his childhood. So it's like layers of the different Dons growing up and then that's flashing forward.
Yeah, but you know what?
With current family members.
You can tell a scene from 1903 in the streets of New York from a scene in 1955. So, you know, at first they said, okay, this is the year, this is the place. And then I think what they did was they just kind of assumed that you'd know from that point on, all right, we're going back here now. I thought it was layered in a very interesting way. They kept going back to Vito, the original Godfather, played by Robert De Niro, by the way.
Right.
And his origins, his story back in the town of Corleone, which, by the way, you know, the town of Corleone in Italy is a real town. And in fact, it had the highest murder rate in the world at one point. I didn't know that. So basically, what's his name again?
Michael.
I'm sorry. I'm bad with names. Michael was basically born in the United States, obviously. Vito, his father, left Corleone, Italy, because his father inadvertently insulted the Don of that town and was killed. His Vito's brother swore vengeance. He was killed. Vito's mother brought Vito to the Don to say, look, this kid's never going to hurt you. Please spare him. And the Don said, nope, I don't trust him. He's going to come back for vengeance someday. And then the mother pulled out a knife and held it at his throat, saying, I won't let you hurt my son. She's immediately killed, and Vito somehow runs away and escapes, gets on a boat, and goes all the way to the United States. And I won't spoil it, but basically he has his comeuppance later. But that whole thing, that's how it got started. You see him developing in New York. You see him becoming more and more like what he was in The Godfather. And then occasionally you go into, I don't want to say present day, because we're talking about the 50s and 60s at this point. But the present day, as far as the film is concerned.
Well, eventually they cut to these Senate hearings,
Senate committee
hearings,
great.
Which I really like because it's a reference. It brings me back to watching hearings on C-SPAN and other channels current day just to keep up with things. But this is kind of a cool technique to look at the past, look into that stuff in the present day because the very investigation is a retrospective, and it kind of puts a bit of a border, like vignettes, each of these different scenarios with the sort of logical extent or where that fits into the puzzle this investigation is becoming.
I think it's worth seeing a couple of times. It's over 3 hours long. But it's so well done. I know it can be a bit much to digest at once, But 1 and 2 I've generally seen as the really good films in the trilogy. 3, not so much. That didn't win. Maybe we'll see that and compare it.
I think Fredo's the real star of the 2.
Fredo. Oh, don't get me started on Fredo.
Fredo really steals the show, I think, and it makes more sense. I would have to see it again, too, but there's no more time.
Fredo's going to have to steal this show because we are out of time. I don't know what's next, but we'll report on that next week. Hopefully, we'll get to 1975. It's great going back and seeing these things, living the period of the 70s, which is referring to a period in the 50s and referring to a period in the turn of the century. But that is pretty much going to do it for the show tonight. Send us your emails, your comments on the show, otw@2600.com, and please stay safe.
Have a good evening. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Normalcy is coming. Things will be good.
Plant something. It's springtime.
Stay strong. Good night.